this episode of Motherhood in Hollywood is sponsored by Kinsa, the world's smartest thermometer. I always keep Kinsa in my arsenal of mom tools. It remembers my daughter's temperature, symptoms, and medications, so I don't have to. But the best part, you guys, it keeps her entertained with games while we wait for the results. You've got to go check it out at kinsahealth.com.
Come on, Mama!
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Whatever time of day you're listening to Motherhood in Hollywood. Hi, thanks for listening. I'm Heather Brooker. Welcome to my show. It is MIH Monday. That means it's time for a new episode of Motherhood in Hollywood. I'm very excited about my guest today. I know I say this every week. Sorry. I'm just excited that people want to talk to me on my show. This week is Anna Lind Thomas. Anna Lind Thomas is the creator of a very funny website called Haha's for Hoo-Ha's, which, can we just talk about how much I love the word hoo-ha? It's right up there with Vajayjay, which I invented Vajayjay. Oprah tried to say it was her, but it wasn't. It was me. I'm the one who came up with Vajayjay. But Anna has laid claim to hoo-ha's, and I think it's fantastic. If you have not gone and check out her website, it's all of these great, funny memes and quotes and writings and little blog bits and things like that for women who, you know, we need a little laughter in our lives, right, ladies? Am I right? So definitely go and check out hahasforhoohas.com. But also, she just started a podcast. So it's over on Blog Talk Radio, and you can also find it on iTunes. We talk a little bit about podcasting. We talk about a lot of things pertaining to women on the show, and particularly women in our industry and moms. And she's also a mom, which is also great. So definitely stay tuned. I mean, if you're already here, don't leave. What a week it's been. Where should I start? Well, first of all, I'm finally coming out of my funk, my sickness, that threatened to thwart my MIH 15 by 15, which, if you haven't heard about that, I am on a mission to lose 15 pounds by my 15th wedding anniversary. And so far, so good. I went to this great workout class this week called Plyo Jam, and Plyo Jam. And it was dance-based, like really high-intensity dance-based electronics. I'm going to put a blog post up about it on my website, so check that out. It was a lot of fun. The instructor Jason and the co-instructor Stacy were so great. It's basically like songs you hear on the radio that you dance around to and jump a lot. And I've realized as I'm getting old, I don't jump as well as I used to. In my mind, when I'm working out and when I'm trying to get, you know, I'm getting back into the gym, I'm walking more, I'm doing all this stuff. I don't know about you, but in my mind, I still feel like I'm that 17-year-old cheerleader who could do backflips and split jumps and run like I did in soccer. I still feel like I'm that person, but my body disagrees. My body is like, bitch, you are old. Settle down. You have had a baby. Don't get crazy. So I want to say, I'm having a little bit of an inner struggle with working out, but I'm trying anyway. It's getting easier. It's getting better. My husband and I went to the gym this weekend and I did it. I got on the treadmill, did a little running, did a little inclines. It hurts. I'm hurting, but it's good. I need it. So join me in my MIH 15 by 15 if you'd like. I'm trying to lose 15 pounds by my anniversary on May 5th. Trying out various workouts all over LA, fun, new, different ways to get sweaty and try to get fit, and diet plans and eating better and all that good stuff. Okay, so briefly, I want to talk about the Golden Globes. All right. I put up a blog post about this and I got some emails from people who were like, why did you hate it? I thought it was great. And that's just Ricky Gervais and who he is. Yes, Ricky Gervais is a very acerbic, is that a word? Did I just make that word up? Right. Comedian. He's very biting and witty. And I love that about him. My issue with the Golden Globes this year was that it was more like he just didn't care to be there. And I'm sure that was maybe what he was putting out there. That was the image that he was trying to portray, like, nobody cares about you stars or celebrities anyway. And then that tone sort of carried over to the presenters, to the, you know, some of the recipients, to, you know, some of the, just the feeling of it. Like, and the Jonah Hill, Channing Tatum bit. Oh man, that was bad. And when Amy Schumer said cunt in the middle of the show, I was like, what is happening? And the girl who came out, I think she's on a show called Blacklist, Jamie something, came out and was like, you know, who writes the shit or who runs the shit or something. I was like, do you know where you are? Like, have some grace, like be a little gracious. You're in a position that thousands of actors would kill to be in, and thousands of actors deserve to be in this town, because they're working hard and they want to be recognized in some way for their craft. And I just feel like everybody was like, oh, we're too cool to be here. We'd rather be somewhere else. So that was really my beef with it than, you know, Ricky Gervais's part in particular. So just, I don't know. Let's all just be glad that we get to be actors and we get to be in this business they call show, right? Right. All right. That's my inspirational chat for the day. Don't tell anyone this is an inspirational podcast, because I will seriously get pissed off. I'm not here to inspire. It's all about me. I'm literally just here to entertain myself. Okay. What else did I want to talk to you guys about? Lots of fun things happening behind the scenes at Motherhood in Hollywood. I've got some new blog posts coming out. I just started writing for the Huffington Post, which is fantastic. Now, if I can actually just find some time to sit down and start actually doing the writings and submitting it to them, that would be great. So make sure you check out my Huffington Post articles. And also, I've been a Today Show contributor for a while now too. If you haven't seen my articles on the Today Show, please go and check those out and let me know what you think. I would love to hear your thoughts. Unless they're rude and mean, then just keep it to yourself, okay? And yeah, so I'm going to now probably go shower, because I'm feeling a bit sweaty today. If you guys have a minute, make sure you go and subscribe to Motherhood in Hollywood, whether you're listening on Player FM, hey, or Stitcher, or iTunes. Take a moment, subscribe to the show so you don't miss a single moment of my hilarity. And now, speaking of hilarity, here is my interview with Anna Lynn Thomas, the creator of Haha's for Hoo-Ha's. Okay, everybody. Basically, my new best friend is on the show today. This is Anna Lynn Thomas, the creator of Haha's for Hoo-Ha's website, and she's the host of the Haha's for Hoo-Ha's podcast. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
I say that you're basically my new best friend because I feel like we could talk for days.
I have to be honest with you. I'm glad you feel that, because I was feeling it last week, but yay, I didn't want to come across too strong.
You know what? Let's get married. Let's just do it.
You move fast like I do. Okay,
let's
good.
Just do it. When you know it's right, it's right.
Yeah, when you know it's right, it's right. Like, we don't need other people's approval. Mm, we're just gonna put the pedal to the metal on this thing.
And it's almost legal in all of the states. Is gay marriage legal in Nebraska? What's the situation with that?
Not yet. Well, it's getting there. Okay. Iowa, we're like, hey, Iowa, take it easy. Iowa was like one of the first ones.
Yeah,
we're
I remember that.
Saddle up, Iowa. And then we're like, then Nebraska got all weird about it. But it's coming. There's definitely legislation happening about it. But
aren't you glad I opened with the softball question of gay marriage?
I know. I have some gay friends and I'm like, why are you guys here?
Yeah, right. Go to LA.
I know. I mean, they love it, but I'm like, boy, I feel like I'd be in San Francisco or something. But, you know, hey.
Listen, there are fabulous places all over the world to be gay, and I don't know that Omaha would be one that I would choose.
Right. It's not like the most fabulous. No. I know.
But I feel like a lot of my gay friends would say, listen, we make everywhere we are fabulous. And that's true. That's true. I will give them that.
You know, I think it's just home, or it's either, you know, Omaha is actually a really cool city, and a lot of people don't believe it until they come here, but we've got a really crazy, like, underground music scene, and we have like one of the highest populations of hipsters.
In Omaha? No way.
In Omaha. I kid you not. There was an article about it in like Vibe or something where they mention Omaha. I'm like, God, I know. So believe it or not, now Western Nebraska, I cannot vouch for.
Yeah.
Like if you're like, hey, what's Ashford, Nebraska like? I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I would, there's going to be a tractor.
Lots of wide open space.
But you know, California is like that too. I lived in Northern California and there's a lot of farms in California. It's not just all, you know, LA.
I think though that people have the image that it is Hollywood. I mean, that's probably what the California Tourism Board wants to project, that it's all Hollywood, LA hipsters, and that sort of thing. But no, California is a huge farming state and
huge.
All the hipsters live in like a 5-mile radius in LA and like everybody else outside of that is just like working families and working people. And
well, I know, and I take issue like when they're like, hey, come to California, we ride really scary high tricycles or whatever the hell.
What?
That guy's on.
You know, who's telling you that?
No, the commercial for California.
That guy on the giant like unicycle or something.
Yeah, honestly, that commercial makes me bitter. Okay, I used to live in California. I'm an ex-California. Now that I'm in Nebraska, I'm like, get over yourselves, California.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
They're like,
do they air that out there? Are they like trying to woo Nebraskans to come to California? Or
well, I don't know. I'm getting it as a commercial.
Oh my god!
So they're paying for the advertising to try to get me to visit California because there's a bunch of like surfer guys who have better curls than I do down to their butts surfing. Whoever that guy is, I think he might be a famous surfer. I don't know.
Everybody in that commercial is somehow famous in some way. I think they're.
I know, and I feel like I should know, but I don't.
Like, isn't even Shatner in that commercial? Like, I don't know. It's a weird mix of people.
I know.
They're trying to cast.
Why aren't you in the commercial?
That's a good point, Anna.
Eating at a meat buffet.
Right, eating at the meat buffets. That's a great point, California Tourism Board.
Well, you're the one who tried to tell me that the real Californians know where a good meat buffet is.
Seriously, if you do come out here, we're going. We're going to go to the Gaucho by my house, and it will blow your mind. You'll waddle out of there. And you will hate me, but you will also thank me.
So a picture of you with like a big ass steak.
A big old meat. They bring it out on skewers and it's like they shave it and cut it at your table in front of you.
You need to get somebody on your staff on that to get you in one of those commercials.
That's right. Or just like, get me free meats. Just get me, be my sponsor and hun, just let me go eat the meat buffet. Oh my God. I love it. Before we get too tangential, that's a big word, Lena Dunham. Think about that. I want to talk about Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's. Now, it was a website before it became a podcast. So tell me how the website began and your blog began.
So Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's, if you haven't heard of us yet, what the hell's wrong with you? You live under a rock because we're like the biggest thing since Huffington Post, minus millions and millions of viewers.
Right.
But Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's started. So I lived in California. I worked in Northern California at a university. Got my master's degree out there. But I've always been wanted to be a writer. I went to school, did a lot of writing, fiction writing. But I kind of took a weird course and went into being a resident director, which if you've been to college and remember living in the dorms and you had an RA, that RA had a boss. That was basically me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I did that for a while. And then my husband and I met and married my husband out in California. And then my family was always in Nebraska. And we decided to come back because he got into a medical program here. And we wanted to be close to family. But when we moved back, I kind of lost my identity. I didn't know what I was going to do. Should I pursue writing now? Should I start working at a university around here? I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. And so I noticed at the time, and this was about 4 years ago, some e-cards was like the shit. Everybody was sending us some e-card. It was like the most popular thing at the time. Your news feed was just on Facebook was just inundated with these e-cards.
My husband discovered those actually, and he would send them to me and I'm like, what is this? This is hilarious. And they just were blowing up.
Yeah. So they were blowing up. The thing I noticed, though, is you could tell pretty easily that all of their writers were men.
Yes. Yeah.
Almost all of the hooks.
Like 18 to probably 25-year-olds.
Oh, yeah. You could tell it was young male humor. The sex jokes were from a male perspective, and they were all sex jokes.
All blowjob jokes.
Like, all blowjob jokes. And I just thought to myself, there's nothing funny out there for women right now. What if I could do that? So I'm a writer. I'm kind of creative. I can kind of draw. And I thought, maybe I'll make my own e-card. So I went and I bought like a writing pad and I made these like sketches for like a cartoon and I made these terrible jokes. And I look back at some of them and some of them are like really offensive. I'm not even going to tell you what some of them are. I was like,
no,
oh,
please
my God.
Do.
I hope there's not a, no, I refuse. I'm going to, people will pick at me. I can't. We're living in too PC a world. I'll get in trouble. So I was really going for it back then. You know, when you don't have anybody following you, you're real ballsy. Mm-hmm. So I called my best friend from high school or from college, actually, who is super, super hilarious. And I asked her to come on board with me, see if she wanted to do it. And we were like thinking of names and all of her names were stupid. And she just threw out like ha-has for hoo-has just to be a joke, basically a funny website for women. Mm-hmm. And I laughed so hard. I was like, I think we have to do it. I mean, our cap of success is going to be low because you can't go that far with a name like that. But whatever, let's go for it. So we just went for it and started the website. We actually started e-card heavy, and that was kind of our identity, which was like kind of like a female version of some e-cards. And then as it progressed,
what do you mean e-card heavy? Like you were starting with just images and
mostly
jokes?
E-cards and jokes.
Okay,
right. So then I thought that. I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of been a writer. So I wanted to use the website more for writing. And so I started to use my work and my writing on the website. And we were just trying to find our identity. We had like 5 followers. I think they were like family and people from church. And then we lost the people from church,
oh,
which
yeah.
was sort of edgy e-cards.
Yeah.
So it kind of started off like that. And then it started to grow. Babbel, Huffington Post started to post some of our e-cards, which just blew our mind because we didn't think how did they even find us? You know, so it was kind of crazy. And then I wrote this story about a date with my husband. And it's really kind of crazy how that happened because I was having dinner with my mom and I needed to write a post for the website the next day. And she was like, oh, you should write that story about your date with Rob. And I was like, okay, I will. I wrote it in like an hour. I had an appointment. I mean, at the time, we literally had like maybe 10 views a day. So I didn't even think anybody was going to see it. Mm-hmm. Published it. Somehow it went viral. I don't know how. It's called The Fart That Almost Altered My Destiny. It's called The Fart Story at this point.
Very funny.
It went crazy viral. And because it went viral, it kind of put hoo-has on the map. And so then it gave us an audience where we could grow and grow and grow. So that's kind of my main gig. And then from that, we started the Hoo-Ha's podcast, which I absolutely love. It is so much fun podcasting and growing that audience. And so here I am.
So did you felt like then, like you're a great example of how someone going viral can mm-hmm. be beneficial and can grow your business. Because I know I interviewed a friend of mine who, I don't know if you saw last fall, she got her what the hell am I trying to say she got proposed to or her husband now husband proposed to her and the proposal went viral and then or actually their engagement photo went viral. They had a Back to the Future engagement photo where they dressed up in exactly like position for position, wardrobe, everything matched the poster for Back to the Future 2. Mm-hmm. And that went viral. And then their proposal went viral as well. And I was like, so what happened? What came of that? And she's like, really nothing. She's like, for like 3 days, everybody wanted to talk to me. And now it's back to who are you again? So I'm always fascinated to hear when people say that something went viral and it helped sort of launch them into another level of their business.
Did she have a platform though to fall back on, or was it just her own photo? Did she launch it from a website or
no? I mean, she has a couple of podcasts. It's my friend Kat Knipe. She hosts the Carry On podcast and oh my God, I just forgot the name of her other podcast. She's gonna kill me. It's a horror film themed podcast. Oh, I'm such a jerk. I'll have to look it. I'll have to
go back and edit it in.
I know, right? And here's where the edit will go.
You're like, what's that podcast called? Horror podcast.
Yes. What a douchebag. I have lost sleep since then, so I'm surprised I even remember what my own name is. But like, she went viral, like crazy viral. Like she was on Good Morning America. Her Twitter following spiked, Facebook fanship spiked, all of that within the course of just like maybe a week or two. And she said none of it carried over to any sort of monetary success or any kind of anything beyond that. You know, it's not like now she's a regular contributor to something, or, you know, it's just interesting to me how going viral now, they say that's what you got to do to get attention or traffic for your business.
Well, I think it depends. And I think if I would have just had the fart story, but I didn't have anything else to back it up, mm-hmm. or I didn't have any other funny content to back it up, I would have lost everybody.
I see.
So, and I'm not saying that your friend's not funny and that she didn't have that, but in my case, that was the thing that helped. So it gave me the followers, and then every day I hustled getting them as much funny content as I could to get it to go more and more. You know, and that's not the only story that's gone viral. I actually had another post. It was like 10 things women want to do alone without men and children. That actually went more viral than the fart story.
Oh, really?
Which shocked me. So when you get that audience, then you have more opportunities to keep going viral with other types of articles. And so then you just kind of grow on that. And I did have a couple of like book deals, but they were not, it wasn't Random House. And it was kind of, I got nervous about, jumping in with all of a sudden, you know, I just wanted to kind of figure out like, okay, where am I? I don't want to come out the gate and make bad decisions because I'm getting this attention. Mm-hmm. I did have a lot of people who wanted to make it into a movie. I didn't grant it. I now kind of have someone, they work on the show Criminal Minds. I'll just say that. And okay. They have proposed possibly making it into a short film. So I do have these kind of opportunities that came from it, but really it gave me the followers. And then I was able to just keep hitting them with funny stuff. And then they became more dedicated followers. I mean, there's really no other kind of way to explain it. So
do you feel pressure every day to put something on the website that's funny?
Yes.
See, that's a big stressor for me, because I feel like I have all these ideas that I want to do, but I just don't fucking have the time. And so everything gets pushed off.
Hoo-Ha's grew faster than I did. So, and my income from Hoo-Ha's grew faster than I did. Now, if you go viral, your income can be really, really good. Mm-hmm. If you're not going viral, I mean, it's just whatever. And so I had to make some business decisions. I had to hire contributors. So I have about 4 contributors right now who add to it. And I haven't actually written too much of my own work on the site for a while, because I'm doing the podcast. I started an adventure club. I don't know what I was thinking. I started the Hoo-Ha's Adventure Club.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Oh my God. Okay. So the thing about Hoo-Ha's is that we've got a wonderful following. I have a lot of fans, but I felt like I was sort of kind of becoming like the BuzzFeed without a budget. You know what I mean? Like BuzzFeed without investors, right, is what I kind of felt like. Or Huffington Post parents without investors or something like that. And that's not really what I wanted to be. And I wanted to figure out how can I, because my heart has always been in the community of it. And I spend a lot of time responding back to fans. I do the best I can to respond to as many comments as I can. And so that's really important to me, to have a presence and to respond to people and to build a community. And so one of my really good friends, he's out in New York. He's doing really fabulous work. Started this hobby club. And he charged like $12. I signed up. It was hilarious. So fun. And I thought, wow, this could be something that helps me with the community part with Hoo-Ha's, to have access to my fans in a more intimate way and to encourage them to do really cool things every month. Because in my demographic of women, a lot of us are moms and we're older, and it's kind of like, I love making fun of humor stuff, but now that we've started Hoo-Ha's, like, the humor game in parenting is pretty saturated. Like the same jokes are getting so overdone, so overused. And so it's kind of like how to kind of keep it fun and keep it fresh. And so I kind of feel like what what else can we do for these moms that's fun, funny, and encouraging? And so I wanted to start the adventure club where we just go in these little adventures every month. So this month I had them do like a dream line. Mm-hmm. Where we're all going to, we have to go to a restaurant by yourself, plan out your dreams. We're going to put them into action. Another adventure I have, I don't want to give too much away in case some of the people in my club are hearing, but we're going to do like a book club. And I actually got the author who is fantastic, who's going to like kind of show up and surprise us and then answer a lot of questions.
Oh, cool. So I'm don't worry. No one listens to my podcast. You're safe here.
I won't let them know that I was on this one specifically. So we're just going to do these adventures every month for a year. And it's a part of me too, because it's like I do mom stuff and then it's hoo-ha stuff. And it's 24/7. I'm writing, I'm doing stuff for the website, and then I'm with my baby. And so there's a part of me that kind of longed.
I wanted to ask, like, how much has it consumed of your life and of your time? Because I feel like motherhood in Hollywood has... It's definitely taken over my life. If I'm not posting on social media, then I'm emailing people about being guests or returning other kinds of emails. And then when I'm not doing that, I'm taking care of my daughter. And it's sort of like all consuming. I mean, it's wonderful and I'm glad to be doing it, but it's all consuming for sure.
It's kind of 24/7. And I don't want to make that sound like I'm complaining about it, but if I want to realize, you know, ultimately I want to be a published book author and I want to get books out there. And so it's kind of one of those things that I want to do. Plus I have fun and I love doing it, but it is all of the time. If I not only make the income to pay my writers, but to make income for my family. So it really is this thing that you kind of do all the time, but you just, the more I've matured and had Lucy and you just start to create boundaries and create time. And I'm really the most productive I've ever been with Lucy, which
me
makes
too.
Me really mad at myself for all the time I wasted before she came around. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, not your daughter, but with my own daughter. Yeah, I'm definitely, yes. I find that because now I'm like, oh my gosh, I only have this 2 hour period of time when she's napping or this 10-hour period of time at night when she's asleep, and I got to get stuff done, you know? And yes. I find that I'm hyper-focused in that way, and it's sometimes good, sometimes not. I mean, sometimes I'm up way later than I probably should be.
Or sometimes I put her to bed, and I'm like, fuck it, I'm putting on Making a Murderer, and I'm going to...
Okay, so I heard you talking about that, and I have just started watching it. I'm only on, like, the third... episode of it, and I'm dying. I'm literally yelling at the TV like, come on.
Oh yeah, it puts you in a rage. And I hope I didn't give away too many spoilers, but at the same time I'm like, the story's pretty much out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just finding out the nuances and the details. I don't know, I kind of think he did it.
Do you? Okay, see, I'm not to the part where I think he did it yet.
No, you're not going to get much else. It's still going to be really frustrating, and what the police did is going to be really frustrating, but you have to ask yourself, then who did do it? And who planted it on his property? And so that's the step.
I guess I
want to
know why. Do they ever answer the question, why would he do it?
Well,
he didn't have any motive.
So here's the thing. So I was mad this whole time. Okay, but first of all, can we address a couple of things?
Yes.
I know you're only on like the third episode, but have you noticed that Avery family? Now, listen, I know they're on the other side of the tracks. Ooh. They're rural.
Oh, watch your back.
Have you noticed that they don't complete sentences or thoughts? Like, they don't, that nothing they say is satisfying because it's like vague
and it kind of trails off at the end.
And the way they answer the phone, so it's like ring, yeah, 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 yeah. I'm like, shut up with the yes. Will you guys freaking talk already? Anyway, we've got that going on. Well, I mean wait, what was your question?
I just was sort of wondering, like, what would his motive be for killing this random girl? Like, why?
Just to rape her, I suppose.
But that means that he, like, what? When did he get rapey? Like, I feel like people are either, like, you're born kind of rapey.
Okay, but here's the deal. He has a history of being abusive, and they don't mention that. And have you been introduced to Lisa yet, the new girlfriend? I don't know what...
She comes on and he's like, oh, she's the best thing in my life, blah, blah, blah. And they have not gotten much past that. And they mention in the first episode that somebody had complained that he was a little abusive. Yeah.
Well, Lisa is his girlfriend, and then she's really supportive for a while, and then she disappears, and she just came out. I just saw the interview on Facebook today, and she said, he's abusive. He's a monster. He absolutely did it. Ugh. I did the documentary against my will. And she was like, I did it out of fear. She goes, I used to take rat poison just to go to the hospital to get away from him so I could have access to a police officer.
Wow.
So that's stuff that I'm like, not in the documentary.
Yeah, I read that they left a lot of stuff out. But I mean, I guess you sort of have to.
Yeah, I mean, I think their point was, yeah, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that we could argue back and forth all day long. We just picked the most powerful stuff. So he does just have this freaky – it's freaky. Like, his nephew shows up, and then the nephew is weird. Like, the nephew says he did it, and then you see the investigators interrogate him, and then you're like, oh, my gosh, this is horrible. They totally – he's slow. He's special needs. They took advantage of him.
They're bullying him.
But then he comes out and says crazy stuff outside of it. So, I mean, the whole thing is just like, it's riveting.
Oh, well, now I have to go because I need to go and watch it. Because I've been telling my husband for weeks, like, we need to watch this. We are behind on something that the world is into, and we need to be hip and with the world.
Yeah.
And we finally watched a few episodes and we were like, well, there you go. But see, I also love Dateline. I love Dateline. I love 2020. I love all of those, like, crime, you know.
But it's not satisfying, right?
No.
I mean, I get sucked in, and it's so – every single episode. And like I said in, like, our podcast that I put on Hoo Ha's, I say kind of in the beginning, it's like – for, you know, the first 10 minutes, I'm like, that son of a bitch did it.
Yeah, he did it. Yeah, you're like, he knew it. And then at the end, sure enough, he did.
Or you don't know who did it.
Oh, yeah. Or they're like, well, he got off. And now the family is still sad 20 years later. Like, well, damn it.
They're just like, well, he's in jail, but we'll never know.
Never know.
See you next time on 2020. And I'm watching him on OWN because OWN's like picked up all the 80s classics. Yes. This is what I'm doing at 11 o'clock at night.
All right, we're going to take a break from the interview for a second because I have to tell you more about Kinsa, the world's smartest thermometer. It's been a huge help to my family over the past few months, and I'll tell you why. It's helped remember temperature, symptoms, and medications, and it's given guidance on what to do next. Everybody in my family has been sick at one time or another over the past few months, and I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have Kinsa there to help. So if you need something like this in your family, go now to kinsahealth.com. Check it out and see what Kinsa can do for you. It is the world's smartest thermometer. Well, we've all got our vices.
Well, it's either that or Sister Wives. Sister Wives is one.
I did hear you mention Sister Wives one time, and I got all like giggly because I freaking love. I'm obsessed with the idea of Sister Wives. I am inherently a very jealous person. And yes. I cannot imagine sharing my husband or my home with like three other middle-aged chubby ladies. I would be like, just.
And you know, Robin's like the hot chick. And
yeah.
You know, like, when Robin came in,
they were all
like, oh, great.
Yeah.
And he's all like giggly, like a little schoolboy.
Oh, so gross. Was it that gross?
It was gross. So he was, I mean. And the show has actually gotten really boring, but I can't quit it. I cannot. I mean, I'm Brokeback Mountain with this show. I swear to you. Like, I'm outside crying. Like, leave me alone. I can't do this. I've got a website to run, and the show keeps coming back for more.
Didn't the first wife just get catfished? Like,
yes, which makes it even more glorious. She got catfished by this real, like, attractive woman.
Yeah, and it was like a transvestite, right?
No, she's not a transvestite. She's just kind of like.
No, I thought that I saw something where she said that the woman was a man. It was actually a woman.
No, she wasn't. No, she was a woman pretending to be a guy. Yes. But she's just a woman. That's just it. A big old chunky tough lady who probably wears flannel is what I mean. That's what she looked like in the photo. So, I mean, I think that she was like, just would lower her voice and totally tricked her into thinking that she was a guy.
Dang.
I know. And so they're so miserable. They cry in every single episode and they're so jealous.
They have to coordinate with their, to spend time with their husband, and they've got all those kids that they're supposed to be mom to all those kids. No, thank you.
Yeah. And you know, he ain't having sex with Janelle, and they even admitted it. And they admitted it too. Like, they were like buying a bed and he goes, I have to admit it was kind of awkward because we lack that kind of personal intimacy. I was like, nice.
Oh God.
So Janelle's the one he never has sex with. Other than to like make their kids.
Is Janelle the one that has like a regular job?
She's
the one,
yes.
The one that works for like city government or something, or she did work for like the government or city.
I don't think you're up to date on Sister Wives, and I'm a little disappointed. I feel like you need to go back and.
I missed a couple of episodes for sure. And I.
Well, they're all real estate agents now.
Oh, she's no, I didn't know that. No.
She's the only one who takes works. She just works and she's pragmatic and she's real serious. She's the bigger one. She had health. She had. She's been trying to lose weight.
Yes, that's the same one I'm thinking of. Yeah.
But you can tell there's like zero sexual chemistry between them. And he basically admitted it in a non-explicit way. And then there's Christine, who I think at the time I thought was like one of the prettier ones. Oh, it's so horrible that we're forced to even kind of designate them this way.
Yeah.
But then she's like super obnoxious, always like really insecure. And then there's Mary. I always felt sad. Like, Mary was always crying.
Oh my God.
Always crying.
Well, because she was the first one. Like, she was the one that was, you know, and I just wonder if she really knew when they first got married that he was going to start living the traditional, you know, old-timey Mormon lifestyle with getting extra wives. Like, I don't know if she really knew what she was buying into, because she seems so heartbroken and like bummed out.
Well, they're trying to promote it as like this really ideal life, and they're not promoting it very well. I mean, I think they're like the poster child of polygamy gone wrong.
Right.
You know what I
mean? Yeah.
I mean, they're showing that they're normal people and that they're not weirdos or abusive, but they're also showing that it's like polygamy. I mean, and then a lot of people are like, polygamy is the way, evolution is and the way it actually should be. I was like, I don't think so.
No.
Like, I don't think monogamy happened because of the Puritans.
No.
I think that we're really jealous people and we don't want our – we're not going to have, like, children while our husband's out, you know.
Banging some other lady, other wife. I will cut a bitch. I seriously could not take it. I would be like – people look at my husband and he's a handsome devil. I'll give you that. But I'll be like, what? Yeah. What are you looking at? He's married. Mm-hmm. I get crazy jealous, so I can't imagine.
Yeah, I was at the grocery store and this woman was just like deadpan, like looking at him. And I just kept staring at her and she never looked at me once. I was like, have you lost your mind? Yeah, I'll cut a bitch too.
Yeah.
We'll both cut the bitches.
We'll just be cutting people.
We're just gonna cut people. They're like, whoa, we don't, like, we're not even looking at your husband's, relax. We're like, well, don't even think about it, ladies,
move along. How long have you been married?
7 years.
You're getting the 7 year itch.
Is there supposed to be one? Right now it's just like we're holding on. I feel like our marriage is really good. I would say that Rob would probably hope that we were having sex more.
Oh my God, I just almost spit water everywhere. I picked the wrong time to take a drink of water.
I mean, I think if we were being honest, I think he'd be like, wow, the baby's really limiting your sex drive. I'm like, yeah, it is.
Welcome to nature.
You know, in the beginning, though, when you have a baby and it's like the baby has full access to your body, especially if you're breastfeeding, you're breastfeeding, your body's not yours. It belongs to another human being. And then your husband comes along and you're like, you've lost your damn mind.
You've lost your
squatter's
rights.
The only thing
rights.
You can go touch is some Chinese food that you go pick up for us for dinner. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to remember the last time we had sex. I feel like it was warm out. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. My husband's listening to this going, oh my God, I'm going to kill you. No. We have sex all the time.
My husband always attacks on like 3 months. He's always like, we haven't had sex in 3 months. I was like, it was last Tuesday.
It but I truly believe that in their minds, they think it's been like years.
Oh yeah, totally. I really think he believes that. He's like, I swear to God, it was May. I was like, it was last Tuesday, sir.
Were you there? Thanks a lot.
He's like, oh, I could have sworn that was like 3 months ago.
Oh my God.
No, it was 3 days. Well, I'm glad you're having a lot of sex. I'm busy over here.
Yes. Just all the time. Right before I logged in to record the show, we were just like, let's just squeak it out real quick.
Throw out a quickie. Yeah.
I feel like I have to say that my husband does the QC, the quality control for all my podcasts. I send him all the episodes. I'm like, listen to this. Tell me if I say anything dumb or like truly offensive. And he's like, well, you do. He also gets really mad at me because I constantly forget names of like really popular TV shows. And I'll be like, what's that show? It's on a network and there's like a cape and a girl who flies.
I am so glad I'm not the only one. Do you do that when you're that's what I do when I'm podcasting. I'm like, I remember one episode was the whole theme was making fun of kids shows and I couldn't remember the title of any of them. I was like, you know, the one with like the slutty chick.
Which kids show has a slutty person in it?
No, Super Y.
Oh, Super Y.
Super Y. Me and my friend made a joke that the girl on the roller skates and the miniskirt's going to grow up to be a hussy.
That's probably true. So, I mean, if she's wearing roller skates that young.
You can just tell.
You can just tell.
Honestly, let's be real. Don't call the PC police when you're watching a cartoon. You just know who's going to grow up to be a hussy. Hello.
I know. You can tell. And also, you know, they're all written by like adult men.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just couldn't think of any of the shows. I'm like, you know, what was that one show where it's a book and they all, you know, yeah. That's how I am for all of I think my fans at this point are just used to it. They're like, Super Y, Anna, move along.
Yeah, that's my husband does. I can see him at his desk yelling things at me. It's Supergirl. Supergirl. God, Heather. Like, he gets so annoyed. I'm like, sorry.
You do your podcast with like him in the room?
No. I send it to him and he listens to it while he's at work or when he's like driving or something, so he can listen to it to make sure I don't like offend an entire race of people or something, which
I know
could happen.
I come pretty close. I go back and edit sometimes just to make sure. And to me, I'm like, I want to be bold like Amy Schumer and not give a shit. But I tell you what, that comes at a price.
It does. You know, I think that too. In my mind, I am an older, fatter version of Amy Schumer because I say really blunt things all the time. I say slightly offensive things. But she definitely has people who do not like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And I find that in the mom world, it's interesting. I don't know if moms are putting up a front, like they're like, "How dare you? That's offensive. I don't like what you said about, you know, sex or underwear or whatever." Or if we're all like secretly like, "Yeah, fuck that. That's right. That's what I'm saying."
It's secretly. I can tell you right now, I have one writer who is a wonderful woman, actually two of them, who always say something offensive in their posts. Well, not always. Let's just say that their most edgiest, jokiest, blunt posts fly, perform like crazy. Now, they also get the most negative comments, but that's because they've been seen exponentially by people. I really truly believe that people feel good and emboldened when someone said what they want to say. You know what I mean? And so, and not that saying something, and I'm not like saying we're saying racist stuff. We're not gross, horrible people.
No.
When you take a joke and you push the joke, people are like, yes, you know, they just love that someone else said it. They love that someone else kind of just went out there and went for it. Most people respect it. Anybody else who has an issue with it, like I had one of my writers who's one of the sweetest and has never written anything controversial, made a joke that her grandma said, you know, she didn't want to go out and catch the diabetes. I cannot tell you how many women were so offended.
Really?
They're like, how ignorant to think that eating Halloween candy would give you diabetes. My daughter has diabetes and it's a real serious illness. How dare you make light of it? I mean, what that is though, is that those particular women have a suffering child and they have brought their baggage to the conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that a suffering child is baggage.
No.
But they have brought their
preconceived, yeah,
their fear, their insecurity, and they showed up to an innocent post that was clearly not dogging on diabetic children.
Right.
And they put their wounds out for yeah. everyone to see.
Well, and I think that there's so many people nowadays that are wearing their sensitivities on their shoulders, you know, like everything offends everybody. And it's, and for people who are in comedy, writing it or performing it, it's tough to either decide like, fuck it, I'm just going to do what I do and people are either going to love it or not love it. Or you try to curb it a little bit, maybe cater it a little bit to people so they are not offended and it's more of a mass appeal, you know?
Right.
Like your, right. like your sitcoms, your average sitcoms mm-hmm. who do the very generic comedy so that it's more appealing to everybody as opposed to mm-hmm. some more small, intimate half hour comedies. Do you feel like you have altered your comedy in any way, like as to so as not to offend or anything like that? Your sense of humor?
You know, I've caught myself in certain posts where the joke is just not worth the pushback. Now, if I believe in a joke, like if I'm like, this is freaking hilarious, mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody else has to say about it. But there's some times where I'm just like, it's just not funny enough for there to go through you know what I mean? Like I kind yeah. of move through the scales. And sometimes I even get mad at myself for doing that. It's like, just say what you want to say. But I have to say, I don't censor myself too much. I would say that my sense of humor is probably more well-rounded. I don't go too far edgy. It's just not where I'm at. Like I like to make jokes about like the simple things.
Yeah.
Like making crock pot chili and then reeking like chili for the rest of the day. You know what I mean? Like I like to make jokes about the little things that happen in life. I don't necessarily go out and I will say like there's certain things that are overdone. I was just at last year I went to the Comedy Store and brilliant, brilliant comedians were up there. But it was like every single one was about sex.
Oh yeah.
I was like, is this the only thing we can make fun of?
No, it is. It's
like that's the thing that was kind of disappointing. Every single one was making jokes about having sex with chicks. All the guys.
Of course.
Leslie Jones was up there. Killed it. Killed it. She was so good talking about how her boyfriend dumped her and he at a dog park and he was wearing Crocs.
Oh my God.
She was like, you wore Crocs to the breakup? This is my heart. You know what I mean? Like that to me is like where that's comedic gold.
Mm-hmm.
The whole like, you know, sex thing. It's like, come on, can we not joke about anything? I mean, listen, I just made fun of my husband wanting more sex, but you know what I mean.
Well, that's what, you know what though? Amy Schumer talks about sex constantly and she's huge. Yeah. She's huge. Yeah. So it's like, where do you draw the line? I mean, where do you try to push yourself? I think so many comedians maybe get stuck in a comfort zone where it's like, well, I could talk about my sex or lack of sex or, you know, whatever. And it's an easy joke. They know it's going to appeal to everybody because everybody thinks about mm-hmm. sex and has opinions about it. And it's an easy joke to go for. I think some of, you know, the best comedians really push themselves to try something else and make jokes about other things. Like Jim Gaffigan is a great example. Mm-hmm. Like he's hilarious. Yep. He talks about his family. There's so few female comedians that have children that are making jokes about their families. I don't know if
yeah.
have you noticed that in your experiences? Because I've looked for a lot of stand-ups to try to like talk to them and have them on my show. But as far as comedians, they're not a lot of moms.
Well, because they're hustling and probably not having much of a family. I think Heather McDonald is an exception, but she doesn't really joke about her kids too much, but she talks about being very rare having kids.
Yeah.
And not fitting in anywhere because of it and how awkward it is. I think she's like a Republican and that even
whoa. Oh, I didn't know outside. That. Yeah.
So she's like a Catholic Republican with kids.
Whoa.
And so she always kind of talks about that. There really isn't. So that's why it was kind of fun. So where a lot of these really funny mom women are emerging is in blogs. They're really not necessarily on stage, I'm finding. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd love to see them. I'm not even seeing a lot of really funny YouTube stars, but that's because I don't think our demographic is that into YouTube. I know I'm not. Like, I just can't sit there and get obsessed over videos like the kids can, like a 14-year-old who's in their room. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, I'll go on and I'll watch, like, you know, an old music video or something I'm thinking of that I'm like, oh, what is this? Or I'll look for like an old commercial or something random. But I do not watch video after video. And I do fun things on Vine every now and then, but they're like cheesy mom things. I do this mom dancing thing where I go to random places and I just start dancing like a goofball. And, but I, you know, I'm not a 17-year-old, and I'm not going to be flashing my hoo-has or anything like that to get Vine followers. So, you know, it's
the, there was the mom whose daughter was really funny, and I forget her name, but her daughter was unreal hilarious. And she was little, but she would kind of prompt her daughter to do stuff, but her daughter would like deliver. So that was like a funny duo. But I think overall, I think a lot of women are reading articles, and so they go to their funny blogs and whatever shows up on Facebook, but there isn't a lot of I just interviewed The Break Room, which are funny mom actors who are doing the thing. So there is room for it. But it's not, you're not going to get the Grace Helbig, passionate, obsessed fans, because you're just, we're going to attract 14-year-olds. And that's really who's obsessed with her. And she's admitted it. She's like, oh, most of my fans are like 12.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And she's going to grow out of it. She's going to grow out of it. And there's going to be an age gap at some point.
So don't you think that the audience will grow with her? Do you think that these people who have become these Vine stars and YouTube stars, that their audience will grow with them?
No.
You don't think
so? I don't. I don't think so. I think they're already getting bored of Grace Helbig.
Yeah.
She was on E! News and it flopped, which it shouldn't have, with her millions of dedicated followers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Flopped. Whatever happened to that show? Did it get canceled?
It got canceled. It flopped. She didn't have any viewers.
I remember seeing that and going, what the hell? Like, this.
She's funny, too. I actually fell down a Grace Helbig rabbit hole, and she had me rolling. Like, there was one where she was doing, like, a tutorial on how to shave your legs, and she screamed the whole thing, and it was hilarious. So she's got some good stuff, but, I mean, it's I don't know what I got kind of bored of her. Maybe it's my demo, but I keep saying my demo. Like, what am I in marketing?
Yeah, right.
Take it easy. Take it easy.
I think gems.
So I think that they're not going to grow with her. No.
Do you think they'll grow with us?
Yes.
Do you think all the middle-aged moms out there that are clamoring to get to our podcasts and blogs every day will be with us when we're 70?
Yes, because there's a huge age gap. I think Grace Helbig, what, is she probably 25? If her followers are 14, she's going to be in her 30s interested in other things, and they're going to be at a different age level.
If she's smart, she will grow and mature herself and her own, like...
Well, we'll see. Product. I mean, that's what you're ultimately supposed to do. But I predict that that isn't going to happen. Maybe I'm bitter and jealous.
Maybe we're just mad.
Oh, my gosh. That's what it is. I'm just like bitter and jealous that chick can go on there and scream while shaving her legs and get 2 million views.
Jeez. But
like, why didn't I think of that?
But the Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's website gets that on a daily basis. So you're already crushing it.
If the fart story goes viral, yes. Did I tell you? But you know what? That comes at a price. Mm. My fart story was on a porn site.
Oh, dear. That's awesome.
I think your fans might want to hear this.
Yes.
So the fart story has gone through waves. It goes through waves of, like, it's been stolen a gazillion times. Tickled, put it up, didn't credit me at all.
What?
It was horrible.
That's douchebaggery.
Oh, yeah. And it went viral on their website. I was like, hi, I'm so glad that I made you guys like $10,000 when it could have been my money. But anyway, so I can tell when it goes viral, of course, and it kind of goes through waves. And during one particular wave, I was checking my traffic and I noticed that I was getting some traffic from a porn website. And I was like, oh God, did somebody like put a link to my website? Like, is it the hoo-has? Is that what did it? So I was looking through like cracked fingers, and it was a fart fetish website.
Fantastic.
It had my photo up, and they were all talking about me, about how they want to fart on my face.
Oh my God.
And abused.
That's amazing. I hope
no one talks about the dark side of going viral.
I hope you get paid for that, though. I hope you get money for that.
No, I didn't get paid. And I sent them a letter and I said, take my picture down. Are you freaking crazy? I have disgusting people whacking it to my photo. me.
In some circles out here, that's when you know you've made it.
I know. See, maybe maybe I need to be more grateful, but I'm just saying, I don't know.
Please don't whack it to my fart story, is what you're saying. You're like, please don't do that.
I was on a Huffington Post live show, and one of the women on there was a woman who wrote a book about her husband having a fart fetish. And I was like, I'm on the same show as a woman who would fart on her husband during sex. Oh, come on, you guys.
That's no coincidence. That's some producer being like, I've got an idea. This will be great TV.
Put them together.
Oh my gosh. The old HuffPo. So where do you see your podcast going? Because your podcast is relatively new and it's over on Blog Talk Radio, right?
Yes.
Like, what do you want to do with it? Where do you see this vision?
Hearts.
You just want to reach the hearts.
I mean, I just feel like it's going to take off. I'm just going to be like the next Howard Stern or something. I don't know.
Obviously.
The podcast is like a side thing that I haven't been totally taking seriously that has blown me away by how my fans have responded to it. I mean, I honestly thought it would be like 5 people listening to it, maybe 10, mm-hmm. you know? And so to see the numbers come in and to see who's listening and to see who likes it has been really fun and a total blessing. I honestly don't know. I am excited to see where it's going to go and what we're going to do with it. But really it's, you know, HaHa's for HooHa's, it's its own kind of brand and its own thing. And this is kind of like this little fun thing on the side. But I love it so much. And it's so, I mean, writing is my thing. That's my passion, which, you know, how I'm assuming acting is kind of your main passion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm never going to go away from the writing, but it is such a fun outlet, right? I mean, how easy is this?
It's great.
I could have done this without recording it.
I'm almost don't want people to come and see my studio because then they'll go, oh, I can do that. And I'll be like, ooh, I don't want to lift the curtain here and be like, literally, it's the easiest thing in the world to do. And it's so much fun. My favorite part is that I get to like, I'm getting to meet like so many great people and hear so many different wonderful stories and people that make me laugh. And so I love it. I don't know why. I'm mad at myself for not doing it sooner.
Well, what about you? Where do you want to take the podcast? What are your dreams for the future?
You know, it would be nice if I could be regularly on a TV show. That would be nice if somebody, like, I don't necessarily need to do a Motherhood in Hollywood.
Can we make TV a deal show right now that whoever gets a TV show first, you're still with me?
Yes.
Okay. Whoever gets the TV show first, the other one gets to be like the sidekick.
Something on it. I feel like as a writer, you probably have a better shot of getting a TV show than I do as a actor. Because nobody out here likes actors. They're all like, oh, you're an actor? It's weird. It's this sort of hierarchy. You know, your producers are top dog, and then the director, then the lighting guy, the gaffer, then craft services, and then the actor. There's just not, even though all the award shows and the red carpet stuff would make you feel otherwise, but like for working actors, it's sort of, you're definitely low man on the totem pole for sure.
Well, then you gotta just bust it open.
I know.
Forget it.
I would love to start writing more too. I need to really be more dedicated with writing for scripted television because it's a whole nother beast, and it's something I love. I love TV. Like I've grown up on TV. I mean, I love movies too, but TV is where my heart is. And I just need to like sit down and focus and write my TV show ideas and then put myself in it.
Yeah. One of the things that is just, when you think about Hollywood, where I'm going to write a screenplay and it's going to become a movie, the hierarchy and the way to get in is just I mean, you might as well win the lottery right. sometimes is what it feels like. Yeah. And so that's why you get all of these other people doing it a different route and finding their own voice, their own following, their own fans by doing it their own way and not – I mean, that's why these YouTube success stories are so fascinating. And these mm-hmm. bloggers who become New York Times bestsellers based off of a blog are just making – writers who are, you know, it just blows it out of the water. And I think that's one of the beauty, that's kind of the beauty of the internet today, where you can be anybody and you can develop a following if you've got the talent and the, you know, work ethic to make it happen. I would say the downside is that then everything is saturated. So
yeah,
for me, starting a funny blog, I mean, the competition is just nuts.
Oh, absolutely. But,
you know, I kind of feel like 99.9% of the time the cream rises to the top. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just.
Yeah. Do you find that you have to carve out a specific niche? Like, you've definitely carved out your hoo-ha's niche, but I'm sure people don't message you and go, oh, well, this was funnier over on this side or, you know, like, or maybe they do. I hope not. It's really douchey if they do that. But like, I feel like. For the competition in terms of like comedy websites and things like that, it is pretty fierce.
You know, you really can't compete. Like I couldn't compete with some these websites that have investors. I mean, they have these $1 million budgets. You kind of have to just yeah. keep hustling at it and grow it organically. One thing that we've been doing is that we started Hoo Ha's Headlines, which is basically like fake mockumentary Onion style articles.
Oh,
but
I
they're
love that.
Mom and woman centered. They do amazing. I mean, they perform so well. And I did have like somebody email me and say, you know, I come here to hear your stories and stuff like that. And I think you should drop the fake stories and just be who you originally were. And I basically told her, I was like, girl, you either grow or you wither at the vine.
Yeah.
And I was like, they perform incredibly well. And I love that you love that style. We're not stopping it. Like, you can read my work anytime you want to, but this is fun.
You gotta try something different. You gotta yeah. challenge yourself and put yourself out there. And if it works, great. If not, well, you know, no harm, no foul. You try something else.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so fun. Like, it was like woman on a diet says screw it and eats honey bun. You know what I mean? Like, that's such an easy post to write, sure. but it's just ridiculous and funny. Or, you know, woman in self-checkout questions her, you know, will to live, you know, stuff yeah. like that, where it's just like you can just pick up the silliest stuff. It's easy to write, it's funny, it gets to the point. But you're always going to have your fans are always going to get, as I've grown, I've periodically get messages from fans who don't like that you're growing, because mm-hmm. it feels to them that they're losing access
that
to you.
It's changing and they're losing what they're comfortable with.
Right. Exactly. And I imagine any artist probably goes through that. So,
well, I do. When my fans message me and they're all like, Heather, please don't play woman number four again. We really like you as woman number one. I hear
but
you.
See, like, you're like, but what am I? You're in such a different bag. Mm-hmm. I mean, how cool is it to say that you are on some of these shows? How fun is that you
it's
were?
Cool. I have
improving with Kevin Hart. Like, yeah. could you imagine? And I could never do that. I would just be, I would be frozen. I would say something stupid. They'd say cut. After like the 10th cut, they would just let me go and hire you is what they would do.
I actually just found out yesterday that I booked another TV show, and I can't say what it is yet because I haven't filmed it yet. I film it in 2 weeks, and I get to play love interest of a pretty well-known comedian. So I'm actually really excited about that because it's something I've never gotten to do before. So, and I'm always nervous to put anything out there, like say, oh, I'm going to be on this show, because I have been cut before from mm-hmm. TV shows, and there's nothing more embarrassing than going, hey, everybody watch tonight. And then yeah. everybody, your family's watching, everyone's gathered on the TV and you're not in it and you feel like the biggest uh-huh. dope. So, I've learned my lesson and I try to keep it a little on the down low, but I am very excited. And I'll be posting like crazy once it's for sure happening.
So how were you in acting classes or do acting in high school and college and stuff like that?
Yeah, I did in college. I had a theater scholarship in college, and
okay.
I Loved it. I did it all through high school too. I competed at the regional level and national level in like theater competitions and stuff like that. And I loved performing. And then I got a theater scholarship and I panicked and went into journalism and
yeah,
here I am. But I found out like after years of being a reporter and an anchor and stuff, like how much I really missed, you know, and I think I told you that in your show too. I really missed, you know, there's something very gratifying about being able to make someone laugh and about the show business in general. People can go, there's a little bit of escapism to it. They can go and they can watch a TV show or a movie and sort of escape from their own lives for a little bit and live through the writer's eyes or the performer's eyes. And, you know, not to get too like melancholy about it, but like there's just something sort of romantic. And when people bash on, I wrote this piece about the Golden Globes this week, I was really pissed off after watching the Globes because I love the Golden Globes. I love the Oscars. I love the Emmys. I just, it's one of my favorite times of the year is during award season. And I just felt like, did you watch the Golden Globes by any chance?
I don't. I always want to so that I can make jokes on Twitter. And then I'm always like doing something else. And then I'm like, oh crap, I missed the awards show. This is why I'll never be the next BuzzFeed. Anyway, continue.
Me neither. No, I just, excuse me. I watched it and it just seemed like, I'm dying. It seemed like nobody gave a fuck. Like Ricky Gervais came out at the beginning and he basically said that like nobody cares about your awards but you, which is great. I love his sense of humor. I love that he's so biting. I love that he's very like, yeah, fuck the man.
Okay, before we get into that, well, no, should I let you finish your thought?
No, I was just going to say like it sort of was a theme then because that was the tone of his opener. That was the theme that carried through the rest of the night and the presenters and, you know, some of the winners even seemed like it was like, yeah, who cares about this? And I was like, I care. Me, Heather Brooker, who wants to be there one day. Please give this award show the dignity it deserves. So
yeah,
that was my beef with it.
Well, I think that didn't Ricky have like a, he's getting like so much heat for his like Caitlyn Jenner joke. And I honestly,
it wasn't that bad. I mean,
it was not that bad.
Maybe we're not as sensitive to it, you know, but I think the people who are the most offended by it are the most vocal on social media. Like the ones who are, you know.
Yeah. I mean, he temporarily called her Bruce, referring back to, I mean, I just thought, and then he made a joke about women being bad drivers and I thought it was hilarious.
Yes. I know.
You know what I mean? Like that does not, I mean,
there's
I
very little that offends me.
So benign.
Yeah. There's very little that offends me, but I'm also I've got the white privilege and like, I'm a middle-aged, you know, white lady. So yeah, but I'm also, I don't know, there's nothing that really offends me though. I enjoy being offensive sometimes, but I'm not really offended.
I mean, I just don't know if that was, there could be a lot more offensive jokes than that, but right. He said, I think he posted a picture of himself on Instagram beforehand, or maybe it was Twitter, where he was like, time to go offend some humorless cunts now or something.
Yeah. Like just something like predicted. Nobody should have been shocked necessarily by what he did, but I think it just maybe is the wrong tone for that show. Like there's something kind of lovely and romantic about Hollywood glamour and seeing these beautiful women and these dashing men on the red carpet and everybody's, you know, there to accept their accolades and pat each other on the back. And it just did not have a sense of occasion about it. Cause like Amy Schumer said cunt in the middle of the ceremony, some rando girl from an NBC show came out and was like, who writes this shit or something like really, like really crass. And I'm like, who the fuck are you? Like,
yeah.
So I'm swearing
really,
a lot.
You're really like emotionally defending the
Golden
Globes.
Did you just
Globes?
See? I am. I just got really heated about it. I got.
Yeah, you did. You're fired
I
up.
Get very upset. Woo.
It matters to you.
I know. But only because, like I said, I want to be on it one day, and I want people to still care about it by the time I get there, so that it's not canceled. It would just be my luck. The year I get nominated for an Academy Award, they cancel the show because nobody watches anymore, or they're like, we don't care about these people, these actors or their awards. I would literally be like, no, that's like my little girl dream moment up on the stage.
That's kind of the beauty of, I think, Ellen DeGeneres. And we were kind of talking about like edgy comedy, and if you kind of refrain a little bit, and I hate to say Bill Cosby because of the monster he is. Yeah. But that was kind of his thing, where it was like, if you're clean and you don't piss people off, you'll be the most popular if you're most general. And I think Ellen's kind of the same way, where...
Yeah, she's very vanilla.
She is vanilla, but she makes me laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I get rolling with her. I do think that it does kind of take a particular artistry to make people laugh over clean stuff.
To have a mass appeal for like clean comedy.
Right. Because I think the dirty stuff can be easier. Mm-hmm. And that's why most of the stuff is about sex. I mean, it's like the edgier I am, the more like, whoa, laugh you're going to get, you know? So, I mean, at the same time, it's like vanilla. And then it's also kind of like, wow, it kind of takes some brains to be able to make someone laugh without being super offensive and ruining the Golden Globes for Heather.
I know it. Well, and that explains why I just say fuck all the time and I swear constantly and I say the most crude and disgusting things because I don't want to take the time and effort to come up with something better. That's terrible and lazy comedy. That's what I got.
I have to tell you that there are times where like nothing is going to deliver the joke. Like the word fuck.
Oh,
I mean, there's just
nothing
is going to do it.
Just a well-timed fuck is just sometimes the only thing you need.
It is. It's it. There is no other way to describe it. And I think that just has to be embraced by everybody. There's just no. But then it also gets overused where it's like, oh, God, shut up. I mean, I don't like it. Sometimes it's just like every other word and you're like, oh, enough already. I'm a mother.
How dare you? You better clean it up. Well, speaking of embracing, I know a lot of people have embraced the Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's website. So I am really excited to see it continue and grow and your podcast continue to grow. And tell everybody really quickly how they can find you, although it's not hard, but some people need specific direction.
I would love to please follow me. I need you. So, you can follow me on Facebook, Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's, facebook.com/Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's. Follow me on my author page, which is anna.lind.thomas. You know, you can Google it, search bar it. And then the Hoo-Ha's podcast. It's Twitter. It's Hoo-Ha's podcast. And then our Facebook page is Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's podcast. So that's a lot of places to follow me, but you will not be disappointed.
I can attest to that for sure.
I will just light it up. Not really. I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of like dropping the ball on some of those, but I'm human. I have a child. I will make you laugh when I've got the time.
Right? Like you're on my schedule. You're on my terms.
Yeah. Like back off, everybody. Take the heat off.
Well, everybody, also too, I'm going to put all of that information as well on motherhoodinhollywood.com. So if anyone's confused for some reason and doesn't know where to find you, I'll make sure I have it there as well. Good. So, Anna, thank you so much for coming on the show today and letting me swear at you a lot and be inappropriate.
You were so welcome. And I just embrace your crudeness completely. I accept you 100% for who you
Yay.
Are.
Yay! And so. Please start writing the TV show that I can star in. That would be
no.
Amazing.
You need to be writing. You're the one who has more access than I do. I'm trying to be like your side. Like you're the Howard Stern and I'm the Robin.
There we go.
Can you make that happen? Yeah. I thought you had connections out there. Come on.
Let's do it. Yeah. As soon as I put my daughter to bed, I'll just add that to the list after showering and cleaning my house and trying to get over this eternal cold that I have. So many things to do. But yeah, everybody go and check out motherhoodinhollywood.com. I'll put information about Anna and about Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's there. And I think that's about it, you guys. Thanks for joining us on Motherhood in Hollywood. And Anna, thank you again for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
All right, you guys, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Balls.